Everybody.
All right, so I will call this meeting to order and we'll do the roll call attendance. Dwayne Walton.
Here.
Thank you, Dwayne. Jason Ryman.
Here.
Thank you, Jason. And I'm here, Josefina Alvarado Mena, for the record. Do we have any public comment? Oh, actually, before we do the public comment, I wanted to go to Mike. Mike wanted to provide a statement before the beginning of the board meeting. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. I was anticipating some parents to show up, so it's a little less relevant, but this is in response to yesterday's situation. I've been meeting with parents a lot and having phone calls, so I was hoping to start the meeting was a general information update to anticipate what might come up in public comment. But even though there's not people here, I think it's helpful for the board. If you're okay, I'll just give a quick overview.
Yes, please. And we might do it again once we come out of closed session.
I'm fine doing that. And I'm also fine waiting until after closed session if you prefer. I just want to make sure we're being strategic and getting information out.
Yeah, why don't we do it now and then?
Okay. So in case members of the board aren't aware, yesterday, early morning, our administration received a video of an OSA student doing what appeared to be firing a firearm at a location other than OSA. We believed it to have been happening during school hours, so it initiated an immediate investigation. In terms of the response, this is one of those, as educators, we have constant discretionary moments on how to handle all different aspects of this. The first thing that I first learned of the posting just around 6 a.m. I saw it and I immediately called OPD because it looked obvious to me that this was a real firearm and not something else. I called Walter Harris, who leads our facility and safety team, and got him just kind of engaged with his old campus supervisors to make sure that if the student were to come to campus, that we were able to have him with us immediately and question him to make sure we understood the situation. We contacted his family to make them aware that he is not was not allowed to come to campus until we were able to investigate the situation due to the safety concern. OPD luckily was very responsive. When I talked to the dispatcher, they were not. They said, we'll have someone down there when we can, which from my experience means 10 p.m. sometimes. And I get a call late at night saying, where are you? We're here. And I'm like, well, that was yesterday kind of thing. They were here at 7:30, which was great. And they saw the video, took it very seriously, contacted the family. Simultaneously, our senior leadership team convened. And we, in one of these discretionary moments, are trying to figure what communication do we want to send out to families? We decided unanimously, we do want to send the information we have out to families, knowing that otherwise they will probably hear from students that they had seen on Instagram, potentially a video of a student firing a firearm. We got an email out at 8:51 that came from the senior leadership team that gave the facts as we had them, that there was no direct safety threat to the campus, but we had engaged with the Oakland Police Department. We were monitoring the situation, working on a continuous threat assessment, and would keep them updated. That went to over 1,000 people. We spent the entire day working through the situation, fielding phone calls, answering all the questions that came up, and followed up with another email that was intended to be very matter of fact in terms of what the response had been. That was at 4:07. There at no point in this time was there any indication that there was a threat to our campus. So there was no need to go into lockdown or partial lockdown or close school. That never became any type of consideration. And the police verified that there was no indication of threat to our campus. There have been numerous questions about the disciplinary status of the student involved. We can't comment on that. We were able to comment and relieve concern, saying that the student would not be returning to school for the remainder of this school year, as there were a lot of questions about that. We're not in a position to be able to answer anything beyond that. And I know that that's hard for some families that'd like to know more, and we simply cannot. The concerns we received were all over the place. Safety concerns, obviously. We had concerns from families that we had provided too much communication, that we were sensationalizing violence in a way that was not necessary, that this was not a situation that demanded that. We had concerns that there was too little communication, that two emails was not sufficient, and they wanted to have more information. We had many concerns wanting to know if the student will return next year, and we shared that we're not able to speak of the disciplinary status or the enrollment status of other students at this time. And we also had a concern that that people received the second email and not the first. And that's really why I wanted to have this conversation here. I thought some families would show up in response to that. And that caused confusion because they're going, we got this email that talks about what happened earlier and a response to it, but we don't know what the first email was. I went with David Smith and looked at all the records on it, and the email went out to exactly the same two groups of people. So we're doing an analysis to try to figure out why that happened. And this is more about future communications, as we need to depend on our emails and our talking points getting out to people consistently. So in terms of next steps, we want to keep our community updated with the information we can provide them. And most importantly, I would say, is really improve, and I've shared this with the board, but our community engagement strategies for next year. So there's all these different avenues for people to be engaged and involved and not feel, what I've learned from talking with some families is they really just want to be more involved. They want to be able to be more of a, you know, cohesive parent community. And so I see this as an opportunity for positive change. And I've had some good conversations with parents connected to that.
Thank you for that, Mike. And we may do it again if we have more participants when we come out of closed session. But with that, I wanted to go ahead and open it up to public comment on the closed session agenda items. Do we have any public comment on closed session agenda items today? Okay, seeing that there is none, let's go ahead and convene in closed session, and we will be back shortly. Thank you, Romy. So we are back from closed session. We have nothing to report out from closed session. We're going to reconvene now, and we'll need to do the roll call again. So let's start with Wiley Neuber.
Here.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Present.
Thank you, Dwayne. Jason Ryman.
Present.
Thank you. And Josefina Alvarado Mena here for the record. So let's look at our meeting norms.
Wrong screen, Romy. We see Jeffrey.
See your, yeah. Here's.
Although not bad, that is the state of mind that we should approach every meeting with. That.
I second that, Jason.
A goal for the future.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Okay, so let's start with our meeting norms. The board recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of our school. The purpose of this meeting is for our board of directors to meet with each other and conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. After hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to observe the meeting. Please use the raise hand function to make public comment. If you cannot use the raise hand function, you can sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all of the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called for is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You do not need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up, and you may sign up for public comment during the presentation of the report or at any time prior. You are not required to include your name with the comment. If you wish to remain anonymous for ease of identifying speakers, please provide a unique and appropriate pseudonym. Due to student and employee privacy laws, please refrain from using the name or any information that could imply the identity of any student or employee. Public comment will be capped at 90 seconds per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. Our board cannot respond to public comment on non-agenda items. This does not mean the board is not listening. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard by board members, please sign up for public comment. If the comment thread becomes harassing or abusive or includes any information that could imply the identity of any student or employee, staff reserves the right to turn off the chat feature at its discretion. We strive to be a learning community that learns from each other. We are also a community comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We recognize that all voices are not treated equally in our society, but aim to value and respect all voices equally in this forum. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. Finally, we address each other in a respectful manner to foster collaboration, build community, and to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members should please state their name prior to speaking. The meeting is being recorded and the audio is posted on the school website. And we have our OSA land acknowledgement. OSA is situated on Huiching, the unceded territories of the Chocheno-speaking Lisan Ohlone peoples who have lived upon this land since the beginning of time. Indigenous peoples in California, the Americas, and around the world are still here. OSA recognizes the historic genocide and ethnic cleansing inflicted upon Indigenous peoples in California and the Americas, including their forced removal from ancestral lands and the deliberate and systemic destruction of their communities and culture. These conditions are ongoing, and Indigenous people have been fighting against cultural erasure and for their sovereignty since the beginning of colonization. To this end, we as a community strive to honor the Indigenous members of our community, uplift their voices and contributions to arts and culture, center Indigenous people's worldviews in our classrooms, and support Indigenous sovereignty everywhere. This land acknowledgement is a small act in supporting Indigenous communities and centering the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work within the Oakland School for the Arts. Solidarity with Indigenous nations can include donating time and money to Indigenous-led organizations, amplifying the voices of Indigenous people, leading grassroots change movements, and returning land. So with that, we will go back to our agenda, and we will have public comment on non-agenda items. And we have 5 minutes for this public comment section. Do we have any public comment signups? So I don't see any. So we will go ahead and go into our consent agenda. And I will entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, Wiling and Duane. And is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Seeing that there is none, let's go ahead and take the roll call vote. Jason Ryman?
Yes.
Thank you. Wiling Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you. And I, Josefina Alvarado Mena, will also vote yes. So the consent agenda passes. We want to turn it over now to our student representative. Is Dawes here with us? I don't see him yet. This is his last meeting with us, and I wanted to congratulate him. So we will come back to this agenda item in case he does join us. Romy, maybe if you see him, let me know, and we can go back to his report. So let's then continue on with our next agenda item. We have the principal's report and the school update. I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Oz, to get us started.
Yeah, it's actually going to go to Katie, and I think the order we have was LCAP first. Is that okay? We need to keep it as it is agendized.
We can move it around. That's fine. We can
okay do with it. Isn't that what you have, Katie, queued up first is LCAP?
Yeah, but I can, just reading the room, I can probably skip over some of what the LCAP is, but then we'll jump to the academic stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Go ahead.
Romy's got the slide deck.
Sorry, it's just taking a minute to show up on my side here. Let me see if that'll work for you guys. Are you seeing it?
Nope, summertime.
I'm seeing your screensaver.
God bless. Okay, let's try this again. How about now?
Perfect.
Can you go back one piece or one slide? I think it has the whole agenda on it. Yeah, so I'm gonna start with the LCAP and do the school report, and then I'll just hand it back over to Mike. And the next one, just kind of giving you guys an update. This is the draft. The LCAP, you can keep going. I know a lot of this, just like looking at who's in the room. If you wanna slow down a little bit, just what the LCAP is, you probably already know. But this is a public review of our draft, sharing out our goals and our priorities, and to keep us sort of focused on how we spend our money and reach those goals. The entire draft is posted on our website, which I can show you how to access at the end of this presentation. The three parts that are in this long document is the budget overview, the annual update. It's 3 years that we have planned out there, and the LCAP reviewing how it aligns with our WASC goals. Let's see, the terminology that's used in the long document. It's not so much in our goals today. Is it okay? Do you want me to go through all these? Would that be helpful, or do you guys feel pretty well versed in LCAP?
Yeah, I mean, I would just touch on what you think you need to touch on.
The one thing I think is like what people, the LEA piece, it's also just OSA. In the long sheets, which you read through, that's the acronym that appears a lot. And the per pupil spending is around the UPP. So if you go to the next one, sorry, it's weird not to control my slide. These are the funding sources that are referenced in each piece. Each one has it's itemized in our goals, how we're spending the funds that come out of these three sort of buckets, the base grant, the supplemental grant, and a concentration grant. Again, we spent a lot of time last year really aligning what's in our charter, what was in our WASC renewal, and our strategic plan. These all pieces sort of lined up and were shared in Zoom last year, PD with our staff, and I think will be partially revisited as we review our strategic plan. There are 5 goals in our LCAP. Each one of these goals has an update in the long document. The first goal is the staff and administration will develop a plan based on data to ensure rigorous curriculum and quality instruction that challenges all students. The school will continue to integrate CTE pathway model program with their existing academic and arts programs to prepare students for college and career readiness. The site administration will provide additional resources, allocations towards socio-emotional students, supports for students, families to address the health and wellness of our students. The faculty, staff, and administration will embed culturally responsive practices within the organization, thereby promoting equity, inclusivity, strengthening a sense of identity throughout the school. And the administration and staff will develop and utilize a school-wide systematic assessment plan to collect, analyze, and interpret data needed to make decisions about curriculum, teaching practices, professional development, and program effectiveness. I would just say also, these goals really have been the focus of the work that's sort of been going on behind the scenes this year, and part of what's going to get presented tonight, certainly around number 1 and number 5. A lot of progress too in the CTE pathway model. So the next steps is we revise this draft, and the final version will be shared in the June meeting. If you want to have input or feedback, you can give us feedback. We may have an additional outreach session for the community, and I can show you on the next page, I think, where to find it. If you go to our website, click on the board governance and public information, it'll be under tonight's meeting, and then you can actually look at the entire draft, and there's a feedback forum. So you could read through the goals, see how much funding we're spending on everything before we work on the final version, which will be presented on June 9th.
Okay, is this the last slide on the LCAP, Katie?
It's the last slide on the LCAP.
Okay, great. So I need to just, public comment on the LCAP. Okay, seeing that there's no public comment, let's just open it up for board discussion. Are there any board comments or questions? Okay, I don't think there's any questions. So let's keep it rolling. Let's go to our next item.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did have a question. In the slideshow, it said something about the surveys that have been kind of reviewed in meetings, and I remember seeing, like, you know, some sample questions being reviewed in meetings, but have there been like full survey results presented in meetings and I've just forgotten? And if so, when was the last time that happened?
Full survey results about the LCAP presented in these meetings?
Oh, is that what you were just referring to as LCAP survey results? I thought the slide was referring to
There's opportunity to get feedback on the draft proposal. That'll be on the website. Survey results that were provided thus far were on the like previous year's meetings that went into the
nothing from this year.
I mean, we do family survey, but that's not related to LCAP.
Oh, so it's a survey about the LCAP that you're referring to from last year.
I think
in the slideshow.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Any other board questions or comments about the LCAP? No? Okay, well, let's close this item then and let's go to the next one.
Okay, I'm gonna just kind of give you an overview, a little snapshot of what's been going on academic-wise second semester. It's the end of a transitional year. I think transitional not only just in terms of our leadership, our student culture, but also just in learning and how to teach again. It has not been a jump back into the way things were. And I think this transition will continue into next year. We're gonna start on the next slide. As we wrap up this year, I cannot wait. Tomorrow's promotion and graduation. It seems like it kind of happened overnight, but it's pretty exciting. And it's actually pretty awesome. We have a former LitArt student, Brianna Noble, who is our commencement speaker. So she went to OSA a long time ago and has actually become quite well known for her work with the community and her horse ranch. And she's speaking to the students tomorrow. Appreciations and goodbyes. We have a number of staff who are actually moving away from teaching or into other careers or other cities. Ms. Bradburn, who's actually gonna be here tonight or is here presenting. Ms. Brighton, Ms. Mimi Brown, Ms. Klusserath, Mr. Crane, Mr. Roos, our Dean of Students, Ms. Helfer, Ms. Jacques McClintock, Ms. Peters, our Director of Enrollment, and Ms. Scully, Media Arts. So I just wanted to appreciate all of those staff members. We're moving on, but no one really ever moves away completely. So I keep that open.
Can you hear that? I'll do the enrollment, Katie. You wanted me to take this one, right? Just to.
Oh, you don't know what that is?
Oh, and you're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we have somebody's not muted. Thank you.
So in terms of enrollment, that number is very high, and I just want to contextualize it. You know, we shoot high because there's a lot of unknowns that happen. The highest we can be enrolled is at 825. If we were to anticipate 5% attrition, which it could be more, we've done a very thorough job in terms of trying to identify which eighth graders are not returning for ninth grade. If we were to see that 5% attrition, it would put us still a little bit over that 825. But I think we're going to be lucky if we're anywhere over 800. We're shooting for 800. And if we're above it, we're ready for it and happy because that helps close some of the deficit gap that we're anticipating. I should say, too, with Ms. Peters leaving, she is still engaged through August in supporting us remotely and working on the enrollment stuff. So we still have quite a bit of support there.
Can you go back one just real quick, Romy? Sorry, the right panel. I just want to share the June meeting will provide a lot more about what's going to be happening next year in terms of academic support, interventions and courses, and dual enrollment and intervention classes as part of this transition. On the next slide, the information is just kind of a framework. I want to be clear that the grades are not in. I can tell you how many students have been rushing this week and getting things in. So what you're about to see is really just a snapshot. The semester and all the grades will be in by tomorrow, hopefully by the end of next week. So teachers aren't working too long into summer. And all of the updated data will be part of a launch of the data dashboard. So again, none of this information is final. So just current in progress. Our current class for graduation is about 87.4% graduating A through G eligible. That's slightly less than last year, but that was because last year was the modified pass, no pass option given by the state of California, because of the impacts of remote learning. Our graduation rate did increase this year, and there are recovery plans in place for those four students who aren't yet to be graduating. Overall snapshot, this is middle school last spring compared to this spring. Overall, our students have done a little differently, I would say. It's really hard to compare. Just when you look at all of this data, you're gonna see the left side, the darker blue is last spring. The teal is this current snapshot of May. The really important thing to consider here is that it's really just not the same school. Data, like school academic course load. Students took classes 2 days a week. It was remote also. Keep in mind like the coming back to 5 academic classes, 4 for middle school, and then their arts program is a big, big shift in looking at this. So I just wanna frame that. But overall, our middle school students are doing really well. On the next slide is high school. There's our overall GPAs. These are all unweighted. You'll see the bulk of our students are doing pretty well in both middle school. I'm sorry, in high school. Not as strong as last year. I think that also just the return and the reality of 5 classes has been a bit of a struggle for some students. I'm gonna break it all down. And the next few, this is just this semester, this year, middle school and high school by demographic. Overall, pretty high, but there is differences across the board. Students with IEPs or 504s, this is for just this spring. You'll also see the high number. I included those in there. We have 90 high school students with 504s, IEPs, and 65 in the middle school. But I thought that GPAs were pretty still strong across the board there. If you look at the numbers of students doing well. We're gonna break them down by demographic. This is again last year compared to this year. Some of the numbers there. Strong growth. We're also 28, like the numbers are really important when we look at these charts because we're talking about 28 students. So you can really break this down and see how we're doing by demographic. This is middle school. Oh, whoops, I'm sorry. Wait, I might've made a mistake, I'm sorry. Oh, this is high school and middle school. I did it backwards, apologies. This is high school, the next one is middle school. The rest are in the right order. Most of the students sit around 3.5. You also see, we're on to Black students. This is middle school. You see the growth there coming back onto campus. Also the changing numbers. Like I do think the demographics of our school has shifted and you'll notice this change as we go through each group. You can keep going. You're on to high school. Sorry, my phone keeps running. This is a combination of middle and high school because it's only capturing 6 students. I didn't want to break it out for both of you, for both, but it's remained at 6. And white students, middle school here, and high school. So there is a difference between sort of what was happening at school this year versus what was happening at home. I think you see a big shift here, more than any other demographic group. For students who are successful at home with 2 classes versus being back on campus. And I'll pass it to Mike.
Okay, hello. I have one slide. There's a lot here, so I'm going to orient you to it. It's kind of the most, it's a very high summary level. And what it is a comparison of 3 years. So the last 3 years, the red one being the current school year. And we have two tests in each year. So if you look at the very left of the graph, we have the December 2019 baseline score for the seventh grade readiness test. The seventh grade readiness test is taken by sixth graders or people who are in sixth grade math. And we give the test twice a year. So we give it once toward the beginning of the year, and we use it for information for teaching and also for placement. And then we give it again at the end of the year to measure growth and readiness for the following year's curriculum. So for example, what we see here for the seventh grade readiness test, December 2019 baseline, is that the average number of questions answered correctly was about 36%. And then there's significant growth, and there's significant growth by the end of the year. It's over 50% answered correctly at the end of the year on average. These bars each include only students who took it both in the fall and again in the spring. So it's all the same students that are being tested here. And so it's comparing, you know, the individual growth. So we have that baseline in 2019 and then the growth. And then we have the year where we were remote. That one is the lightest color in the middle. And then we have the current year in red. And so we see that this year we took the test at the beginning of September, end of August, beginning of September. We have our baseline. If you, again, just sticking with the seventh grade readiness test, which is sixth graders, we have a slightly lower baseline score on average, maybe 32%. We have a lot of growth, and we end at about, looks like maybe 46% on average answered correctly. I would like to note that this test is not, you can't look at these percentages like we're used to looking at percentages in school, where we say 90% is excellent and 80% is pretty good and 70% is kind of average. You can be deemed proficient in all topics of the test by scoring around 65%. So 65, 70% is typical for students to be able to cover most or all of the topics. But if you look at the rest of the year, so we have, you know, each year, and each year, if, for example, the eighth grade readiness test would be taken by seventh graders or people who are in seventh grade math at the beginning and the end of the year, and so on. And you can, I think it's most useful to compare 2 years ago to this year in red. And I think that there's pretty good evidence here of that learning loss we've been hearing so much about. Students are coming in at a lower level. It's a little bit hard to compare the baselines because you can see that the baseline test was given at a different time of year. So 2 years ago, the baseline test was given in December. And this year it was given right at the beginning of the school year. And so you would expect that if you actually gave that baseline test 2 years ago, right at the beginning of the school year, it would be a little lower because presumably they learned something between September and December. So if you can imagine that baseline coming down a little bit from the score 2 years ago, then the baselines are really not that different. I mean, I don't know how much it would come down, but I would expect it comes down a little bit. But the end of the year comparison is, I think, pretty telling. And so in each of the subject areas, students are finishing quite a bit lower than they were 2 years ago. I think it has to do a little bit with where they started and maybe more with that issue we talked about earlier that Katie mentioned. You know, this is a transitional year. I think students are learning how to be in school in person again. I think they got used to something that was going on last year, which was very different. And it's been tough. And there have been a lot of other things that made this year tough for students. So I think we're seeing significant growth. We still see that they've grown quite a bit over the year, but they're just not ending up quite as high as they would have a couple of years ago. And that will be interesting to watch for the next 2 or 3 years to see if we are, you know, how do we approach back up to there. Of course, we also have to consider is our student body changing or anything like that. But absent other changes, we would expect to see, you know, maybe over the next couple of years, we'd expect to see the current year start to move up and look more like what we saw 2 years ago. And I'm discounting last year a little bit. The test in both cases was given at home as opposed to in school. So when it's given in school, we know that the student is there with only a pencil and paper. The test is meant to be taken with only pencil and paper, no calculator, no internet, no notes, no books, no sisters, no brothers, no parents. And with those instructions were given last year, but of course, you know, we don't know. And I would say, given just what I was seeing last year, those scores, when I look at them, are surprising to me, the ones in the middle. So that's why I'm putting more weight in comparing 2 years ago to the current year. And if anybody has any questions about this, I'm happy to try to address them.
Do we have any board questions on the math scores?
I have a question on just how the timing works and so geometry readiness is that score is given to students who are in algebra at the beginning of the year, who are about to enter, who are actually, they're now enrolled in geometry. Is that right?
That's right. These are students who were in algebra this year that we just went through. So at the beginning of the year, they took a geometry readiness test. And, you know, in every case, you wouldn't really expect them to do very well at the beginning of the year because they have not had a lot of the curriculum that is meant to make them ready for the next level. So the scores at the beginning of the year are expected to be lower. And then we like to see that growth. And we like to see, you know, if a student is coming in around 65% at the end of the year, we're feeling very good about where they are. And there are many that did come in at that level. Of course, we're taking an average here of all students, and it's not on average quite as high as we'd like it to be.
Also, Mr. King.
So 65% is the goal.
I mean,
and we're almost never there. How does that?
The goal, so I would say,
I would say
the goal is, you know, as we'd like students to do as well as possible. Although very occasionally we do have students who score close to 100%, I would say that's really not expected. It's not really how the test is designed. And, you know, the test is written by UC and Cal State, and it's very general, and it doesn't line up perfectly with our curriculum. So some things that are emphasized in the test in a particular year might not be covered quite that depth and may come in another year. So there's not perfect alignment that way. But, you know, we'd like to see scores as high as we can see. If we get a score of 65% or so, we feel like that student is very well prepared for the next level. They've gotten where they need to be. They understand most of the topics or all of the topics pretty well or very well. And they're ready to go on. So if we get to that level, we're happy. You don't see it on this chart because this is average of the whole school. So we don't tend to reach that as an average. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, we can look back a couple of years and we can see a couple of two or three instances where we did. But we don't tend to reach it on average, but we do have a lot of students. If we were to make a histogram of all the students, we would see that there are quite a few that do reach that level.
Okay, thank you.
I did have a question about the, you know, addressing the learning loss in this math core subject area, and that is, like, are there additional interventions that we're thinking about for next year to help students kind of make up ground here in terms of math? So just wondering about that.
Well, I would say I think we're doing something very significant in the math department for next year, and that is that we are changing curriculum. We're filing a new curriculum for sixth grade through Algebra 1. And we have piloted that curriculum in a couple of classes this year, and the teachers have all looked at the curriculum. And we feel that curriculum is better for bringing in students who are struggling. So if we find somebody who is lacking certain foundational elements, and maybe having trouble accessing the curriculum as it is now, the CPM curriculum, which really has a lot of wonderful things about it, but also asks quite a lot of students. The curriculum we are changing to, the reason we are changing to it is because it seems to do a much better job at bringing people along regardless of where they're starting. I mean, just looking at the way the lessons are planned, they give everybody an entry point and a little handholding to get them moving in the right direction. And so it's much easier, I think, for students to access it that way, to access at least part of it every day. And honestly, much easier for teachers to know that they can hold students accountable for doing something, because I think sometimes we look at students who are lost and we feel like, oh, we need to help them, but we can't hold them accountable for the fact they weren't really working today because they just didn't understand what was going on. And I believe in this new curriculum, the thing that sold me on it is I believe in the new curriculum, teachers are going to be able to hold students accountable because I believe every student will be able to do work in that curriculum every day.
Thank you. Let's go to Jason. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. And first of all, Mr. King, thank you for pointing out some of the limitations on the 2020-2021 data, because it really was throwing me off just from looking at it. I'm glad that you made that point. But for me, looking at the 1920 and then the 21-22 data, one of the things that I'm trying to eyeball here is the difference between the baseline data and the growth data, kind of that gap. And in many ways, the larger that gap, the better, right? Because that's the amount that's grown. When I look at the comparison between the years, I notice the amount of growth that we're seeing in 1920 seems to have been larger in each case, or at least the same or larger in each case in 1920 than it was in 21-22. Do you have any ideas or thoughts on what might be the cause or some things we're looking at to address that piece?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I it's hard to know, but I believe that school was really hard for kids this year. Like they got used to a certain set of expectations and a certain way of doing things last year. And it was quite different than what had been in place 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I think that just coming back into an environment where you're with 30 people instead of alone, where the expectations are, there's more need for personal responsibility. And, you know, they also, I think they didn't learn as like, that's why if you look at the second, that middle year would be misleading. I don't think that that reflects the actual, you know, learning that happened that year. So I think they're coming in and they're both coming in with a less foundation than they had, and they are less in the habit of and able to sort of do the things. And maybe I would say, I believe I saw this, less motivated. I feel like if I look at my students 2 or 3 years ago, I saw a lot of motivation to you know, if the grades were bad, I saw a lot of motivation to want to correct that. And I saw a lot less of that this year. That's my anecdotal impression, is that I was seeing less of that this year. So I think that a lot changed, and there's emotional presence of the students is different. It's like when you've lived through something that is so hard and so devastating and like traumatic, you know, the grades don't seem quite as important right now. I think that's part of it. And, you know, this was a tough year for other reasons too at our school. So all those things, I think, contributed to that.
Thank you. Let's go to Dwayne.
Hey, thanks, Josefina. I really just might want to acknowledge this data visualization. I like it. You can tell there's been a lot of just discussion off this one slide. So just kudos to you for that.
Thank you.
And I want to make maybe a potential question or another way of how we're looking at the data for both yourself and then also Ms. Zog. So when we look at, for Ms. Zog, with the I think the GPA kind of trends, and then Mike kind of with this in terms of readiness, have we looked at it, or do we have data in terms of the students with 504s? Because I'm just wondering, if we start to dig into it, there may be some summative information for the students 504s that might help in terms of both, you know, how they're falling both in GPAs as well as maybe how we can work with those students, you know, based on readiness, you know, for the both the class of themselves and then moving from one grade to another. So I don't know, nothing that anyone can respond to, but
that I can respond to that for the math data. I don't have it right now, but that is definitely something that we can do. We can create that comparison or that analysis. And I'm happy to do that. This is, like I said, this is a very this is like the most general summary I could give in the time I had, but in the past, people who have been here for a couple of years have seen these results broken out by ethnicity and other factors, and we can create that kind of detail going forward. So I'd be happy to create one for with 504 IEP.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you. So Mr. King, anything else on this slide?
No, I don't have anything else.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for this presentation. I think that there is a lot of interest, you know, in terms of the math performance in addition to the ELA performance. So thank you for putting this together for us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So we'll go on to, here we go. Ms. Bradburn, welcome.
All right. Are you able to hear me okay?
We can.
Great. Hi. I'm Ms. Bradburn. Okay, so this is the SRI, Scholastic Reading Inventory. This is a slide you've seen a few times before, but basically SRI tests their reading, gives them a reading score level. It's our primary standardized test that we use in-house. And it basically tests two things, text complexity and vocabulary. So it creates a scale score based on those two factors. Kids take it three times a year, at the beginning of the year, mid-year, and then at the end. Next. And this is the bands of proficiency that when we talk about, this is sort of the standard one that comes as a default in the SRI system. Proficient is where we want everyone to be. One grade level below is basic, two or more is below basic. And then if they're above that, you'll see that dark green, which is advanced. And there's the numbers there that for each grade level, you'll see it goes up as you go up in grade, what the proficiency band is going to be. Okay, so this is the 2022, what it looked like at the beginning of the year. In September 21, we had about a quarter, a little less than a quarter of our students were not quite at proficiency. So we were actually coming in pretty strong, and you could see that we had some notable growth into the advanced range. Obviously the proficient group, the raw percentage got smaller, but that's because so many went into the advanced, and our below basic went down to 7% and our basic went down to 13%. So some good movement there overall. Where our different classes landed, we have 72% of our sixth graders are proficient or advanced now, 79 seventh graders are, 80% of the eighth graders are, and in ninth, we've got 87% of ninth, 10th, 86. Here's one outlier, which is the 11th grade. We're not seeing them track with the same, at the same levels as the other grades. 12th is 87%. That, however, that 11th grade has been pretty consistently in that zone. So I don't know that that's necessarily showing a great concern about their growth, but more where they came in, even in sixth grade, and how they've tracked since then. So yes, we are concerned about them, and at the same time, it doesn't mean that we're not seeing growth with the 11th grade. Next. I did intentionally leave out 2021, not because of the reason that King gave for the data not being as relevant, but it's because the circle that I had for it was broken into five bands, and it was just a little bit misleading in the way it looked. So, but to be fair, it actually didn't look a whole lot different than this. I would say the one difference in 2021, we had actually more students in the advanced than we did in 2019, 2020. And now you'll see here in 2022, we're continuing with that trend. So next. Okay, test activity is who took the test. And we actually did really well in middle school. Almost all students took it in sixth, seventh, and eighth. We had some drops in ninth, 10th, 11th. And then we always have had, since I've been tracking this, a real issue with the 12th graders, getting them to take the test. There's a lot of reasons, but I did some individual checks on the 17 students who we did not test at all this year. 12 of those have already tested proficient or above in prior years. And the five who did not reach proficiency, there's already a lot of interventions in place for those five students. It's not that they're falling through the cracks, it's just they're not testing. Next. So here's how the growth came out. This is a little different. We usually see a more of a curve that tracks along those, and that's pretty typical where the sixth graders get the highest growth and it tracks down. Not sure exactly what's going on with eighth grade. Talked to Ms. Guerin about it, and her perspective is that it's just been really hard. They feel very disengaged this year from her perspective. And she believes it's largely a post-pandemic challenge. A little bit more in the bump with the ninth graders than we've seen in the past. The other three, 10th, 11th, and 12th are a little lower than we usually see. But I will see a slide in a sec that might get some perspective on that. And again, that 12th grader continues to be a challenge, but I don't really think that's just getting the test is a challenge. I don't think that's significant. We did see zero growth in the 12th graders, but I think that's more about who's testing and how many are actually completing the test. So next. All right, so for this one, I did break it into the five bands because I found that was interesting to see how many of our middle schoolers are actually testing above into the college and career ready level, which is 1355, and to see how that's actually really starting to move kids even in middle school where they don't need to be there yet into that band. So I thought that was pretty interesting to see that. Personally, as a sixth grade English teacher, I'm very proud of what we saw in the last test period. We got 57% of our sixth graders are now in the advanced range and 16 are at grade level. So similar numbers there in seventh grade, really looking good there. 68% are in the advanced plus the 14 at proficient. And again, they're in the eighth grade. We've got some worries with the 19% that's below. Same thing with the approaching, actually in all the middle school, we've got probably about 20 to 25% of our students are not quite at proficiency yet. So that's definitely of concern, but we are seeing positive movement with them. So that's a good thing. Next. And we're actually, if you could jump back, I apologize. We didn't see too many students in eighth grade move out of emerging, and we actually had five students drop into emerging. So that is of significant concern with the eighth grade. I can't quite tell if, you know, I wasn't in the room watching them test. I can't tell if that's disengagement or actually struggling. My guess is it's a little of both. Next. Okay. And then I went back to the four bands for high school, largely because if you combine that college and career ready, it's hard to see the, it's just messy the way it looks because you got a very few students are there in the advanced. It just, combining it makes more sense. So, and I was actually talking to Ms. Napolitano about what I initially perceived as a lack of growth in the high school. And she pointed out, well, part of what's going on is we've got nowhere to go really in a lot of cases. We've got in ninth grade, 88% of our students are proficient or above, 89 in 10th. So we definitely have some movement we could see there in the 11th grade, something to target for next year. When they're in 12th grade, we have 28% are not quite at proficiency, but we've got 86% in 12th grade. So yeah, that's what I'm seeing with that. Feel like the lack of growth is as much a reflection of so many of our kids are already there. Next. And takeaways. So basically big takeaway is the majority of our students are at proficient or above. Our middle school growth continues to be strong. In my opinion, the high school growth is likely skewed because of a high number of students who've already attained that proficiency. I do recommend targeted intervention for students who have not yet attained proficiency. And I think that's probably been one of our biggest gaps. We do have lit support, but I'm not sure, and I've talked to Ms. Guerin a lot about this. I'm not convinced that that's been as effective as it could be. So some really targeted intervention for those students who are not there yet. I strongly recommend a plan to promote literacy skills for that 28% of next year's senior class that are not quite there. And I would also say we might want to consider allowing seniors who have already achieved college and career readiness to officially opt out of the SRI test since they've already proven it. I think it tends to, when they go into the test with sort of a why am I doing this again attitude, it tends to actually lower the data in a way that's not helpful because they're like, they just bubble through it. And then we get some skewed numbers because of that. I think that's my last slide. So happy to take questions if you've got them or wait till the end.
We can take questions now. Questions for Ms. Bradburn on the SRI results and our takeaways.
Yeah, I just continue to really appreciate this work that you have been doing, Ms. Bradburn, and we're going to miss you a lot on so, so many levels, and this is just one of them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. Any other board questions or comments? Well, I also want to appreciate you, Ms. Bradburn. You taught all three of my children at OSA, and you will be missed. And we very much appreciate this data analysis that you've done over the years, including this one. So thank you very much.
Yeah, Josefina, I was going to tell you, a very tall young man came and chatted with me today. I'm like, who are you? Oh my gosh, it was Xavier. I was shocked.
Well, best of luck to you, Ms. Bradburn.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's continue.
So this is just the end. There'll be an updated GPA and far more than GPA information provided in June, and then within the new website, there'll be data. GPA is it's a tricky marker. I think it's far more telling to look at the number of courses students are taking and which ones they're failing. And then we are using all this information to plan next year's curriculum, professional development, and instructional practices. A huge piece is there are three other members of OSA staff and admin that are with me on the AVID core team. We're launching into AVID next year to really actually hone in on literacy skills and organizational skills and pilot it. They have finally offered to have a school pilot program. They're using OSA as one of the sites. We are buying into it, of course, but it'll be a school-wide intervention strategy. So there'll be a lot more data to sort and things on that. But if you have any questions, I can take them.
Board questions or comments?
I know you said this at the beginning and I just totally missed it, but the GPA data is based on first semester?
GPA data is based on May 17th.
The partial data?
Well, it was the snapshot I took that day to prepare this report.
Oh, okay.
Because it was the grades don't come until tomorrow. So they will shift.
And the comparison is the same day a year ago?
It's the end of semester last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's probably pretty off then.
Best I could do.
Right. Okay. Of course.
We'll wrap, but I'm expecting a lot of shifting.
Yeah.
What happens, and especially on some of the graphs that are like a range of like 1.5 to 2, the numbers are all over. It's why GPA, I struggle with GPA data, honestly, because it depends on what the grading systems are in the classroom. Everyone is different. And then arts classes, academic classes, all are in one GPA number. So it's not as telling as if you look through student by student.
Other board questions, feedback, comments?
I mean, maybe because it is so challenging, it would be worth it to do academic GPA, overall GPA. And then it seems worthwhile to just wait until the end of the year, because at least you have like your close of the semester is just going to be, I would think, more true.
Yeah, I agree. Like if we're looking at future planning, it'd be better to have this presentation at the wrap, but definitely something to consider.
We can, I think, definitely consider that and move the report, to the June meeting. So I think that's definitely a possibility. I did have a question or a comment just about the whole issue about re-engaging students and student motivation and connection to learning. And if there is I'm sure there is, but if you could talk a little bit about the strategy on the social-emotional side to help reconnect kids to learning and, you know, the intersection between that and academic achievement.
Yeah, the socio-emotional piece is huge. Even just being around people again, I think was the whole launch of the first semester. Re-engaging with school is tricky. I think that actually the 11th grade is kind of this perfect case study because they left right there, you know, they left in the middle of their ninth grade year, came back as 11th graders, this whole sort of foundation of high school. And it's a real clear divide in the 11th grade. It's students who are really, really struggling. They were struggling as ninth graders, came back struggling, kind of questioning what the role is of all these classes. Why are they taking certain things? And then the other half of 11th grade is students who have a lot of college credit and are sort of more forward thinking. And they are moving on to their senior year with all these big plans. So I look at the 11th grade too as a sample of how to re-engage students who have had intervention, who have struggled with school, to re-engage and why they wanna do it and what comes after. So I think that's been part of the big conversation of like, what is the meaning of all of these things and why they are doing the things they are doing, which then comes back to me around like curriculum planning, designing lessons and units to make really understanding like, what is the outcome? What is it for? Like, why am I doing it? Which I think has actually kind of been building in towards like a lot of the crossover with humanities planning, the push with literacy, the arts integration pieces, so that it's not these standalone classes that students are taking, but to see like a more holistic approach of like, this is why I'm doing this. And with the avid part that I actually really like is that students identify their own goals and just continually cycling back to that in terms of why they want to be able to do certain skills. I see next year as like a skill building, like across the board as this transition, we've identified things that they really need support with. But also then there comes with this ownership of like seeing the things that they can accomplish. And I think being almost in isolation in a silo, there was no sort of like chance to reflect on growth and engagement. You just kind of got things done. So being back at school and like kind of celebrating things, I think is a different engagement strategy. And also like not being afraid to ask for help. I think that was a big step this year, is really just not being shamed for intervention.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all for the report and for pulling the data together in this, you know, really, I think, busy time of year. So thank you all for the report. Let's move on the agenda. I think we're up to the advancement report now.
I think it's finance first.
Oh, finance. Okay, let's go back to finance then.
And before I jump in, I also want to just thank that team and Katie being stretched thin. We've had no assistant principal and she's pulled this together and doing dual role, and Mike working super hard, and mostly to Chris right now. Just, I'm going to miss you, Chris. I really enjoyed working on these reports with you. We've done many of these together, and Chris puts like full heart passion into monitoring student growth for SRI. It's not just a job. She truly like monitors it in a way of like full care. So Chris, thank you. You've been amazing to our school. I'm going to miss you. Let's talk money. I'm going to keep this kind of brief because we went over most of this. I think everyone but Wai Ling was present at the finance committee meeting last week. So let me know if there's questions, but I'm going to keep it a little surface level. We'll start from there. We'll do an update on next year's budget and look at the three-year projection. The short of it is this is actually a three-year outlook. I draw your attention to the highlighted number, which is projecting a deficit of $170,000 for next school year. Reminding you that the highest we saw in our projections a few months ago was about 1.4 million, and most recently was about 1.25 million. And through all the different levers that I've identified in working with the finance committee in recent weeks, we've managed to make a lot of progress there. And in a minute, I'll review what assumptions are present in that and what assumptions are not present in that. Because we still don't want a deficit. We're pleased that we've been able to decrease that deficit significantly. But as you look at years two and three, if we continue operating like this, eventually we run through our reserves. And so this is not a good model for the school. But I think when we look at the assumptions, there will be a little bit of relief there. Next slide. So here are the assumptions. This is the salary increase for all employees. You know the new contract for the union members. You were very much involved in implementing that. And then I appreciate your support and making sure that our non-unionized staff are also seeing a pay increase as inflation is hitting everyone hard. And this is assuming a 2.5% increase for all non-union employees. This is the updated COLA of 6.56. I'm going to touch on that more on the next slide, but that's the most recent hard number we have. This is with the special education remaining unchanged. This is assuming a 10% increase to medical coverage. We don't know if that's going to be accurate. The finance team, when I met with this week, estimated 5 to 7%. I figured we should go conservative in all directions here and estimate 10. Liability insurance, the estimate that people have said will be going up 12% across the board. I conservatively wanted to go beyond there in case there's a increase to our premium. We've had some situations arise this year, and I just want to make sure that we're being conservative in all of these estimates. This is assuming a $1.3 million advancement goal and assuming $250,000 revenue from our summer academies, which based on what we're putting together as we pilot it for this June, I believe to not only be feasible, but possible that we could even exceed it. What now, back to the fact that it is a conservative projection, this is what's not accounted for. And I do believe that we're gonna have some positive news coming our way. I just don't wanna bank on it. Enrollment could be above or below 800. So that could go either way. As you know, every student above or below is roughly a $10,000 difference to our revenue. There's word that the COLA will actually be as high as 10%. That would be a couple $100,000 or more added in terms of revenue for per pupil. The discretionary block grant is being suggested to come in somewhere between $1,000 and $1,375 per ADA. With 750 ADA, that would be the numbers I outlined here. That, as far as I understand it, would be unrestricted funds that would have to be spent over a yet to be identified range of time. I don't know if it would be 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. I do believe all signs are pointing that there's a significant influx of money coming, and the timing for us is perfect in that we have a new facility that we need to do capital improvements on as soon as it's available to us. David Smith has been amazing in terms of what he's done to let our technology infrastructures last for way longer than they should. And if we see this, I want to make sure that we're making investments that pay for the long, that you know, benefit us in the long run. They're a slight hit momentarily, but save us money in the long run. And then there's also the continued funding for the expanded learning opportunities, which could be as much as $2,500 per eligible student. Also an after-school program. This comes down to bandwidth, and you know, we have the vacancies of assistant principal and dean of students. And depending on what skill sets come in with those candidates, I wanna see if there may be bandwidth to help us organize an after-school program, which I think in the long-term for our school could be a significant source of revenue. So I just wanna keep that out there, and we'll continue to talk about it as time goes on. That's the surface level. So let me know if you have questions. You will get the full detailed draft of the budget so you can vote on it at the June 9th meeting. We went on more details last time we met. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Board, questions or comments? We did spend, I think we had a great discussion in the budget study session earlier. What's it, last week? Time's running together so quickly now. So if there's not any more board questions or comments, then we'll just keep this rolling. All right, let's go to advancement.
Great, I think Steve's here. You wanna start us off, Steve?
Sure, so we'll give a high level overview this month, and next month we can get a bit more granular in terms of how we're ending the academic year and some of our planning moving forward. But I'm happy to share today, we're just about, as of today, about $900,000 raised against our $1 million goal. The arts chair appeal earlier this week has really led to a bit of an uptick. So given where we were in January, December, January, I think this is good progress, and we're committed to try and close that gap between the $900,000 and the $1 million. So, and also to report that the Heart of Oakland did raise $102,000. So thanks everyone for their support and participation in that community-wide event. The next slide. So I shared about the Heart of Oakland. We also had our inaugural OSA Rooted in Oakland Business Breakfast, Business Arts Breakfast. It was very well attended. We canceled our 20 years in the making donor appreciation event, which was planned, not canceled, postponed it. It was scheduled for May, but the new digital media arts facility is not available. Hopefully it'll be released by the inspectors this summer, and we'll look to doing something in the fall. The family participation rate in the annual fund has increased to 46%. Our challenge coming out from the arts chairs is try and get that to 55%. And we're still doing major donor and institutional giving cultivation. That's ongoing. And this is the time of year where we're really focused on year-end reports to institutional funders. It's a requirement of a number of the grants. So we'll be completing those reports this month and next month. Next slide. So in terms of year-end activities, there's a lot of data entry and analysis, especially because a lot of the gifts are coming in at year-end. With those, there's a lot of donor acknowledgments that are going out, receipts and thank yous. In terms of the annual fund, just to review, the senior leadership team sent out an appeal on March 16th. The arts chairs did earlier this week. We're going to have a digital day of giving campaign, an all-in-one challenge. There'll be a final appeal that goes out in June from the executive director, and Mike will be making phone calls. And then we'll have one last all-in challenge, really focused on trying to get that participation rate up and close the gap between the $900,000 and the $1 million. We also need to create what's called an annual report, which is a summary of our activities that we give to our major donors, especially our institutional donors. We're working on quite a number of institutional donor applications for the next academic year. That process is already in play, and we've started planning for the next academic year. Next slide. Just in the way of marketing update, the following projects have begun. We are already building a thought leadership strategy and social media content calendar for 22-23. The website design project launches at the beginning of next week. The merchandising online store is in planning. That started this week. And we're finalizing 20th anniversary branding. And we'll be doing a follow-up on the business breakfast to really strategize next steps and the design of that concept through the next academic year. And there's quite a bit of ongoing outreach to business and community leaders. So that's really a high level view of advancement in marketing, and happy to take questions.
Okay, let's do public comment first. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing that there is no public comment on this item, board questions, comments.
Hey, Josefina, if you can hear me, I just want to just tell Steve, just thank you for, you know, all the great work. You've come in and it seemed, you know, pretty seamless in terms of getting us to this point, and I'm enjoying the metrics that you're tying into, you know, kind of this work. So just thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. Any other board questions or comments about advancement or and our marketing? Well, I really want to appreciate you, Steve, and also Mike, for all of the advancement work and the growth. And it just seems like there's so much going on, which is exactly what we want to see on the advancement front. So thank you both for all of your hard work.
Thanks.
Okay, so then we're on to our last board agenda item, and that is going to go to the governance committee. So I'm going to turn it over to Dwayne and Jason.
All right. So, and help me out, Josefina and Jason. So is this just an update in terms of kind of where we are on governance? I did see something, a vote on the agenda. So I just want to make sure maybe we tackle that first, if you are wrong.
Yes. So this is the vote of the vote for the second, the first, a student of color seat. And this was a nomination from the student body. So the vote is related to just that particular student seat.
Okay, so thank you. And that helps in terms of, and I'll just summarize this for myself. So what we're voting on is just making a seat available for when the applicant is so selected, they would be able just to come in.
I think we actually have the candidate. Yeah, we created the seat, and now I think we have a nomination that we need to vote on for today, and this is a non-voting seat.
Okay. because Josefina, you are, and again, my apologies, but it because you're more maybe informed, if you want to just sort of take us through this, and then I can kind of give an update, Jason and I, on the other governance work.
That sounds great. And Romy, I believe we do have the nomination, right?
That is correct. Our 11th grader, Carol Suarez, I believe she's in 11th grade, was nominated. She ran as a representative for the Board of Students of Color. And the students, I believe there was a vote, and I know she made a video expressing her interest in the position, and she is the nominee from the students for the board for this newly created seat.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for that update. And so the board at a previous meeting voted to create a second student seat, a non-voting seat, and a seat that would be dedicated to a student of color. The students working with Kayla Scepter created a process by which interested students were nominated, and then there was a vote, and that's how we got to this particular nomination. So I think with that, is there any public comment on this item? No public comment. So if there's any board questions, if not, we can go ahead and entertain a motion to accept this nomination and elect the student to the board.
I motion that we elect the student to the board. And just for the records, thank you, Josefina, because I do recall having that conversation with Kayla in the process. So I just wanted to also publicly acknowledge that. So, but yes, I motion that we accept the student.
I second the nomination of Carol Suarez to the board.
Great. Any board discussion? Okay, so we'll just call the vote. Dwayne Walton?
Yes.
Thank you, Dwayne. Wiling Huber?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason Ryman?
Yes.
Thank you. And Josefina Alvarado Mena, I also vote yes. So we'll welcome the student at our, I think this is, well, let's do it in August. Since this is the last week of school, so let's give the students a break. All right, I'll turn it back over to you, Dwayne.
Well, thank you so much again, Josefina. So yes, in terms of just other governance activities, Jason and I, along with a number of the board members and leadership, we have been our main undertaking has been conducting a profile assessment of our existing board members in terms of skill sets, strengths, interests. And that will allow us to understand kind of where our current board is, how it's organized as we work to bring on new board members for the upcoming year. And so I would say we are over 80% complete, closer to 90% complete in terms of kind of with our board assessment. And we have already started to identify candidates. And just to recap for those that are on the call, we sent out an open community call for candidates who are interested, or if you knew of candidates. And I believe that went out around the March, April timeframe. And then we most recently, 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting just as a governance committee with OSA leadership to discuss other candidates that have surfaced through some of the meetings, leadership meetings that Mr. Oz and others have had. So we are continuing to kind of develop our slate, and we have another governance meeting scheduled for early June before our June board meeting to kind of just finalize that slate. Jason, Josefina, or Mike, anything else we wanna add?
No, just thank you and everyone else who's been working on this. I know it's Josefina's done a great job being president and holding everything together in the meantime. And Dwayne, you've done a great job getting us more help so we can get a fuller board to support everybody. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, Dwayne, for that summary and also taking the lead in terms of trying to pull, you know, all of the candidates together. So just want to appreciate you for that as well. So I think that is it. That's our last agenda item. If there's not any more questions on this item, any more questions?
Can I make a comment that has nothing that's not related to a board item. I just want to thank Mike, Katie, Romy, every staff member at OSA for this year. This has been a really tough year, we know, for the whole team, and you've really held it together for the school, and really showed not just professionalism, but a lot of care for everybody. So thank you for everything that you've done for the school and for our kids.
I think the whole board seconds that sentiment, and we have deep appreciation for all the work that has gone on this year. Thank you all. And we look forward to working with you in the future. And for those of our team that are moving on, like Ms. Bradburn, we wish you really the very best. So with that, we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening. And we'll see some of us will see each other tomorrow at either promotion and our graduation. So also congratulations on moving two classes forward.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.